Welcome to the Darker Side Podcast. This is a podcast where we delve into the darker side of our existence. The morbid, the macabre, the spooky, and the absurd are all fair game as we discuss murder, UFOs, cryptids, creepypasta, the paranormal, and the dark depravity of the human soul. I'm your host, David Bottle, and as always, my co-host, Forrest Smith. How are you today?
I'm doing okay.
Good, good, good.
I'm alive.
Also, we have Rachel again.
Hey, Rachel.
I'm starting to become a regular.
You are.
I am so happy.
Thank you. Yeah, pretty much.
Our other co-host, Rachel.
We love
thanks,
you.
Thanks, guys.
John is also another going to be one of our co-hosts. He's a co-host full-time on this show now.
Welcome, John.
I got hired. What up, y'all?
Congratulations! You have failed!
Hey, everybody.
It's just so much fun.
Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you.
All right, guys, before we get started here today, I would like to take a moment to express our sadness at the loss of the great broadcaster, Art Bell, who passed away on what would be considered the most appropriate day for his passing, this past Friday, the 13th. He was the creator and original host of Coast to Coast AM, a paranormal radio show that helped to further the nation's knowledge of the creepy, paranormal, and UFO experiences. Without him, shows like the Darker Side podcast wouldn't exist. This show is dedicated to his legacy.
Rest in peace.
R.I.P.
R.I.P.
All right, guys, I'm going to jump right into our first news story, and by coincidence, this happens to be from coasttocoast.com.
Nice.
The story today is a story out of Ohio. Numerous residents of a city in Ohio have reported encountering nightmarish raccoons that display unsettling zombie-like behaviors. Authorities at the Youngstown Police Department say that they have received over a dozen calls in the last few weeks from frightened citizens describing the creatures acting particularly strange. Specifically, they say the raccoons stand on their hind legs, bare their teeth, and then topple over to the ground where they lay motionless for a while before repeating the puzzling maneuver. So basically, they're... and then we'll slowly get back up like a zombie and then go rawr, and then, you know, kind of like a zombie would if you were to just push it over, I guess.
Fuck.
One wildlife photographer who witnessed the weird antics of the animals said that they have never seen a raccoon behave in such an extremely strange way. Making matters all the more odd is that these incidents have occurred during the daytime, which is atypical for the nocturnal creatures, and the loud noises which would normally scare these animals away seemingly have no effect on them. Is that kind of a rabid type of thing, maybe?
I was thinking, yeah, it's monkeys infected with rage, and 28 days later is going to happen.
28 days later. Don't even get me started.
I love that movie. It says, well, one might suspect the raccoons are simply rabid. Wildlife experts say that this is probably not the case, and that based on witness descriptions, the creatures are likely suffering from a disease known as distemper.
Oh, that's it.
The old cure-all distemper, you know.
Yeah, that's what happens when you don't chalk your wagon to ford the river, and then, you know, Timmy falls in and gets distemper.
Right, yeah, he gets the vapors and distemper.
I'm sorry, I can't
even. And although humans cannot contact the illness, they warn that dogs can, and so pet owners should be mindful of that until odd outbreaks can be contained.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, so.
Ohio.
I drove through there.
Low in the middle, high in the, you know.
It's round on both sides and high in the middle.
Corn, exactly. Lots of cornfields.
All right.
And meth. It's a meth state.
Ah, it's unfortunate that, yeah, it definitely is. Forrest, do you have a news story for us today?
Morgue employee pretends to be dead for April Fools, gets cremated. everyone wants to prank their friends, family, and even customers, but this man... Well, let me start out with the source. This is from 8shit.net.
8shit.net? I wonder how reliable they are.
Like A-T-E, like nom-nom, 8shit?
Number 8, yeah.
Oh, number
shit,
8, okay.
.net, and then, of course, the rest of the URL with the page I'm on.
Hashtag fake news.
Maybe. Everyone wants to prank their friends, family, and even customers, but this man got it very wrong. 27-year-old Thomas McClure is now an ex-employee of a morgue in Boston after he tried to prank his coworkers by pretending he was dead. This is Boston. Boston, everybody.
Massachusetts.
Yeah, but I mean, that's stupid. Whatever. I mean, why would you put yourself in a situation where you could possibly end your own life? But again,
well, yeah.
That's like one of those, what do they call it, the Darwin Award?
Mm. The Darwin Award.
Anything else, or is it just a headline type of story? Either way, it's kind of it's stupid and silly and fun.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
I mean, like, it's dark. It's dark because he was an idiot. Pretty much.
Dark, dark stuff. I mean, you can make this into a movie. I mean, it's crazy
but
shit.
That's stupid.
It's so stupid.
Yeah, but then the movie would be over in 5 seconds.
Right. Hey, before.
I gotcha. No, I'm dead. Oh, no.
I'm sure, like, Jason Blum will probably figure out a way to do a story on this. Maybe. Who knows?
All right, John, did you have a new story today?
I do, actually. So, I got this from NBC. Their title is Dead Man Balking, which I thought was hilarious. There's a Romanian man who, in court in Romania, they refuse to acknowledge that the man is actually, in fact, alive. So, it breaks down like this. Constantine Rulo, or Rulu, I don't know, correct me, I don't know how to, he's Romanian. He learned that he was dead. So, basically what had happened is he was estranged from his wife living in Turkey. He'd been there for about 20 years, and then she decided to report that he was dead in about 2015. Since he wasn't there to argue, they determined legally that he was dead.
Oh. Well, the statute of limitation, I don't know, it's like 7 years or something.
To whether or not you're dead or alive? Whether something.
Yeah, it's a small number, in, at least in the United States.
So somebody goes to declare you dead?
It's 7 years, that's all it is. If you go missing for 7 years, I can... legally determined to be deceased.
So I disappear for 7 years, and then I can start all over.
So he got thrown. He got thrown out of Turkey and sent back to Romania.
Oh Jesus!
But they won't acknowledge that he's alive. Turkey won't let him back in. So he's a man without a country. He's a man without a. He's
identity.
Not even a man. He's like a living ghost. But yeah, they wouldn't let him file his request because he filed it too late. So,
what?
Constantine Rulo, you're alive somewhere, but we're not entirely sure. That's and he's kind of a sad looking dude.
Oh, poor guy.
That's a little picture.
He's like, he's got nowhere to go. How would you look?
Yeah, so there's Constantine, the poor bastard. Anyway, I saw that. I thought it was the darker.
It's like that movie,
that's
airport.
The darker side of wife, right?
Yeah.
Right. Pun. I'll be here all week.
Oh, good Lord. Oh, thanks, John. All right, well, that we'll do it for our news stories today, guys. That was pretty quick. We breezed right through those things.
Yeah, yeah, we did.
I've got a creepypasta here, and it's called The Window by a person who calls themselves Ready Lover 1420.
Right? If that is your real name.
It's a great name, right?
Wow.
During the summers of my teenage years, I used to work landscaping with my father. Kept me out of trouble, and it gave me a little spending money. Yeah, working with your dad can suck big time, but I used to goof off a lot, and with my dad as the boss, I knew I couldn't get fired. We used to work on this yard of a woman who owned a well-respected and popular Italian restaurant in the town. Dad would say, we're going to work Angelo's today, and I never minded, because my dad used to leave me to work the yard alone, and we would go off to work, and he would go off to work other yards. The house sat on the street and had a small patch of grass in the front yard, and the majority of the yard was in the back. The yard was big with a slight hill going away from the house. It was an easy job, but the size of the yard made the morning fly by. The house was a turn-of-the-century Gothic-style home and had a large viewing window looking into the backyard, and often I would see Angela sitting at the window drinking tea and watching me work the yard. Angela was an older, short Italian woman with a warm smile, and she would wave to me when she noticed me looking at the window, and I would always wave back. Fast forward a couple years, and it was the summer before I went off to college, and my dad drops me off at Angela's house to take care of the yard, and as always, he left me there alone to take care of the yard, and he would go work elsewhere. I was nearing midday, and I was finishing up the detailing of the yard, and I took a break to get some water. Along the side of the property was a large blackberry bush. I would often fill my belly with those berries when they were in season, so I was enjoying some berries and hydrating myself when I looked up at the window checking to see if Angela was sitting there, having her tea. It had been a while since I had seen her smile and wave, and as luck would have it, she was sitting there smiling down at me and waving. I smiled and waved back, and as usual, then went back to finishing the job. Later I looked back at the window, and Angela had apparently moved on to another part of the house. A while later, I was packing up the equipment, and my dad pulled up, and we loaded the equipment, and we got into his truck and pulled away from the house. A short while down the road, my father and I got to talking, and he asked me, "Hey, did I tell you?" "Tell me what?" I asked. "Did I tell you about Angela?" "What about Angela?" I replied. "You sure I didn't tell you?" he said. "No, what about her?" I said. Oh, he went on. About 2 weeks ago, she suffered a massive stroke and she passed away. Her son still wants us to keep up the yard work for the estate, he finished. A chill ran up my spine. My body went cold, and I was at a loss for words. Finally, I said, oh, I see. We drove home that day, and all I thought about was what I had witnessed that afternoon. I didn't talk much after that conversation. I never told my dad about seeing her that day. Until this day, I am still haunted by her smiling and waving me from the great beyond.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
What?
He didn't know it, neither did I. But my father and I were closer at that moment than we'd ever been in our entire life.
Oh, good Lord. Wow. Man, I love creepypasta.
That feels like the most real one that you've read, I think. Like, that feels like it could happen.
Yeah, it does.
All right, guys, let's move on to our movie review today.
Awesome. Oh, yeah.
This movie is based off of a Stephen King joint by the name of Gerald's Game. It is the Netflix original, Gerald's Game, brought to you in 2017 by director Mike Flanagan. Again, a story by Stephen King, adapted Gerald's Game. This movie got a 6.7 out of 10 on the IMDb's. It is a 91% on Rotten Tomatoes, making it what, Rachel?
Certified fresh.
It's certified fresh.
I love saying that.
A 3 out of 4 by Roger Ebert. And 81% of Google users like this movie. The tagline goes, a woman accidentally kills her husband during a kinky game.
Accidentally kills her husband?
Yeah, that's wicked wrong.
Already. Yeah, she doesn't accidentally kill
what?
Her husband.
No, no, no. Handcuffed to her bed with no hope of rescue, she begins hearing voices and seeing strange visions. That's a weak-ass description.
I've never heard of that.
That's because that's not how it goes down.
No, because accidentally is a load of hogwash, in my opinion. That.
Well, considering she was handcuffed to the bed, how did she accidentally
yeah, considering
kill him?
The fucker... All right, so movie starts off. Husband and wife are trying to fix their relationship. They go off down to their, what is it, beach house, would you call it? Is that what you say it was, John?
Lake house.
A lake house?
Lake yeah.
It's oh, it's a lake house. Or it's yeah. A lake house. Yeah, because that tree wouldn't have been growing in the yard if it was, but whatever. Lake house. And they get right away to this moment where he's trying to get her in handcuffs to spice up their lives, their relationship, this, and then she's attached to the bed and she can't get away. He, prior to that, had popped a fucking boner pill.
Yeah. Couple of them.
Couple of them. One prior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then as soon as they started to, like, get crazy again, he popped another boner pill.
Mm-hmm.
He's a man in his mid, what, 50s, early 60s, you think?
Oh, yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so he's probably already got heart issues anyway, and now he's popping boner pills. It's just going to make your blood pressure skyrocket and your blood go to your dick, so. He passes away from that, not from accidentally her killing him.
You could argue that she kicked him off the bed and there was blood. It's like you could argue that he had a heart attack and then, I mean, like, 6 of 1, half a dozen the other. Was it that he hit his head and bled out, or was it?
No, I think he was dead before he hit the ground, because when she was, you know, maneuvering her legs to lift him off of her, because he had collapsed right on top of her. That's a way to go. But when she had pushed him off, like, she was trying to hold up his face, and you could see his eyes were open. And then he fell to the ground. And that's probably why there wasn't that much blood. Because head wounds bleed.
That's true.
Yeah.
That pool of blood wasn't as large as it realistically could have been.
Yeah.
And this is the mother of a young boy talking, so I feel like.
So prior, like, you know. Prior to them actually getting to the house, she encounters this dog. And she, at one point, before the sexual act, feeds the dog. So now this dog knows that it can get food from the house. Before they go up to the room and they get into these sexual positions and this weird fucking murder chokeout fetish that the husband has, they leave the fucking front door open.
Well, and it's like she looks back and, like, reaches her arm out ever so slowly, as if she knows she has to do it,
yeah,
but just keeps on going.
From a film perspective, I think you just gave too much away there with that motion of her.
Oh, my God, of course.
It's like, oh, no, we know something stupid's going to happen, when they should have just left it open for us to figure out on our own. I feel like if you push it too hard, then you're and then you go back and go, oh, that's, the door was open. I get it now.
That's
instead
amazing.
Of it's going, hey, everybody, look at the door. It's open. It's going to come to the factory in a few minutes. And so the dog comes in after the husband falls and dies. And he basically starts eating her. And at that point, she's had enough. She's gone crazy. And she starts to see who?
Her husband.
Right.
Her dead husband. But he's, you know, still walking around in his boxer briefs.
Well, she sees something else.
Blaming her for everything still.
I mean, I agree. That's a great, I mean, that's an amazing point, though. But there have been movies that have done things like that, where they want the audience to just figure it out while it's going. And movies have been negatively criticized for that.
Yeah, well, this one's like positively criticized, but we'll get some negative criticism later. I'm sure.
Ironic, right?
So basically, it just continues on. She ends up going into this experience of her being molested by her father when she was 12 or 10. 12. 10 in 12. The books, 12 in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, she gets in, she's molested by her father, and a solar eclipse happens, and then she just confronts all these demons in her own brain. At one point, her own self is now talking to her, so her husband and herself are now split personalities. She eventually sees this weird moonlight man.
Yeah, she's called the Moonlight Man.
Yeah, the Moonlight Man. And
creepy.
You have no idea what's real, what's her psychic, her psyche, her craziness, her, what would you call that?
Or she lost her mind. Wouldn't you? You're handcuffed to a bed. Your husband's dead on the floor. You're watching a dog eat him.
She went through a lot of trauma.
A lot of trauma. Yeah.
But she's also got this emotional baggage from her childhood as well. And that's now being brought out because she's at this point facing death and what she thinks. Her brain is telling, hey, you know, she's gone into this crazy dementia. I don't even know what to call it. Just a mental breakdown.
Yeah. Psychotic breakdown.
And she's being forced to face this issue. Along with all of her baggage from her past.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys felt this, but the last half of the movie, I felt like I started to question, like, okay, well, what if she actually did things that we never got to see, because it's all just a mind fuck.
Like, we'll eventually figure out what's happening. We know that it doesn't, but in that, you're like, well, yeah, I don't. You can see where she could have done stuff, whatever. But I don't know. This movie was a weird one for me. In the payoff, you know, she ends up getting out, but the way she gets out is just crazily brutal.
Like, it's insane.
Yeah. I mean, it's insane the way she gets out, because she literally gloves her hand, basically. I don't know if you know what that is, but it's... You pull it off, and she lubed it up with her own blood and then was able to get it out, but ripped part of it completely off the bone and stuff, and... You know,
it was brutal to watch. It really was.
Yeah, and then in the end, because she had to face all of this stuff, she basically becomes this better person, and it helps these people now who have dealt with childhood molestation and other issues. That's how the movie pays off in the end. What did you think of it? Can you point out any things, Rachel, that...
So, and anybody who's watched any Stephen King movie, or read it, books, either or, there are quite a few correlations between... one of his other famous ones, which is Dolores Claiborne, which I found interesting. It's very similar to Dolores Claiborne, but I also enjoyed the husband references the dog
Cujo.
As Cujo, yeah. Which is fantastic.
And he says something along the line of, we all die, everybody bows to the beam.
Bows to the beam.
Which was a reference to the Dark Tower series.
Yeah.
Oh, so I missed both of those. They called the dog Cujo. I also didn't watch the fucking movie.
I hated it.
30 minutes I want back. But
please don't add that out. Yeah, I mean, you can if you want.
There is a direct correlation between Gerald's Game and Dolores Claiborne. Stephen King wrote those two books roughly at the same time, and they both came out roughly at the same time. Dolores Claiborne kills her husband during the solar eclipse. She is molested by her father during that same solar eclipse. Across the lake from each other, these mm-hmm. two incidents are happening. And in the books, during these two incidences, both of the ladies, Dolores and Jessie, is that her name?
Yes.
Jessie,
what?
were seeing each other's experiences through their own eyes. Well, in the books, they interchange.
And well, they do reference that in the movie, because she talks about, you know, a woman standing above a well, which right, is
which
like
was Dolores. Her
yeah, when she tricked her husband to fall down. She set him up to fall in, which I was like, yeah, kick ass. to fall in, and then the Jesse, the woman in Gerald's game, describes looking up, like as if she was in the well, looking right. up at Dolores Claiborne.
Yeah, I think that was more of a nod as I was reading stuff on that from the director and the writer who did it. He's, you know, it's a fanboy, and Dolores Claiborne didn't do anything with Gerald's Game, but Gerald's right. Game, the movie, did a nod to them. Mm-hmm. So I found fun. I actually did like the way it transitioned, the way it eventually became a story of triumph, etc. I will give it good marks. Briefly, how did you feel about the movie, Forrest?
I loved it. I love outstretched, needed endings like that movie has. Because literally, like, what, an hour into the movie, I thought it was going to end. I'm like, okay, this must be the ending. And then you have that, like, extra 40 minutes, and you're just like, okay, we're just going to get extremely realistic, I guess.
Yeah.
And trying to think of anything special to point out. Well, I would like to point out, I want to be honest, I love Stephen King. I've only read selective books from him. So I had really not much knowledge how much this line crosses with other stories, mm-hmm. parallel stories, parallel events happening. So I am not aware of that, but I loved everything about this movie, the creepy factor, everything. Like yeah. even the last 20 minutes, you still felt creeped the F out. Like,
yeah. Absolutely. John, what do you got to say about this? I know you've got a harsh critique because you didn't finish the movie.
Oh, God, yes. And I'm so sorry. I told you guys I'd watch any movie.
Yeah.
Not at least you're honest.
Not this one. And I got to say, it's watching somebody descend into madness and seeing like a play happening in front of them is different than reading something like that. Like, because you can get into somebody's head differently.
Right.
And I'm super psyched they didn't. And to be fair, to give the movie a little more credit than I did earlier today, to give them a little bit of credit, they didn't do that stupid thing where you like pan the camera at the person and like they're talking to themselves inside of their head. It's like the muffled sound of them having that conversation, which is super played out and was in every movie from the 1970s. And that's cool that they didn't do that. But at the same time, if you're a fan of the books, it might be hard to see the sort of thing played out on television in front of you. And it's a miserable story anyway.
Maybe it should have been a longer yes. movie.
Oh, God.
It's like an hour yeah. and 40 minutes.
No, I think timing-wise, I think it was just right. You know, beginning, middle, end.
Yeah, I think another longer and I would have probably been...
Yeah, I would have gotten bored. If it was any shorter, I probably would have been pissed off. So, yeah. I mean, right. I think it was a good amount.
And I think John does have a good point where it is definitely harder for some people who have read his books to even, one, want to see a movie based on it, and or two, differentiate the two. I'm somebody who can differentiate the two, and it's okay. I know a movie is a movie. A movie will never be a book. You know.
Yep.
It's just like you were talking about the.
Gotta accept it. Not a comic book either.
Yeah, exactly. But you kind of have to, because the book is so much more personal. It's Stephen King. He's giving yep. you the story, and then you can interpret it the way you want. Sometimes people like John, and sometimes even some of them myself, like I can't, there are some movies that I just can't watch book wise to movies. So
I read online that he helped a lot with the like the screen playing of like the shots of everything, you know, the playback.
I actually
on
heard
set.
That he the only thing that he ever did was watch the rough cut and said that he liked it.
Really?
Yeah, and that was from the director's mouth. So
he doesn't wow. really get involved with his movies.
No,
he really doesn't.
Not this one.
Wow.
He only saw the rough cut and thought it was better than some of the other movies that he that were
yeah.
made.
Wow.
Like the Gunslinger?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't even want to talk about that, John.
Woof.
I'm going to give it a probably an 8.5 out of 100 manillion bingle boppers.
I'd say like 7 out of 10.
7 out of 10?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're with that.
Yeah, I don't like movies with incest like that. It's just, ugh.
Ugh.
It hurts.
It's bad. I know. It's. I'd give it like a 9 out of 10.
9 out of 10? Not bad. John?
Oh, man, I shut it off.
Zero?
Sure.
Zero out of 10.
It's not the worst thing I've ever seen, but probably, yeah, 0 to 0.5.
0.5?
0.5.
That's
nice.
Not bad, John. four words for me is fuck her dad seriously. I mean, that's probably could be taken wrong.
Do we have to?
No. Like, I don't... Four words. Go around. Like, anybody got four words for this movie?
I don't even know. It was like, meh. I liked it. Some parts I liked, some parts I didn't.
So
meh.
For it.
Please include this. I would say her dad deserves punishment. I was thinking death at first, but no.
That's a good good four words, John.
Don't waste your time.
Don't waste your time. Fucking amazing, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
I still can't. I four words. Yeah, meh.
Good choice.
I just can't do it. I can't figure any words out right now. All right, guys. Well, that was the
I love you all.
Can we just have that be the official one?
Intro song.
Yeah. So that was the Darker Side movie review. Sorry, we didn't really brutally. You can see it. Watch it.
Please watch it.
Give your own review. Do whatever you want.
Let us know what you think.
We want to know.
Let us know what you think. Absolutely. All right, guys. Well, that was the Darker Side movie review. We're going to be moving on to the segment we like to call Diving Deeper into the Darker Side. Today we have Rachel presenting. What are we talking about today, Rachel?
So today we're going to be talking about an incident that took place in the UK known as the Rendlesham Forest incident.
Oh my God.
A lot of people like to equate it to the UK's Roswell. Oh, so we had Roswell here, New Mexico. Everybody knows that in the 1940s. But this took place in 1980, right after Christmas, literally.
Wow.
So it took place in Suffolk, England. The forest is a 5.8 square mile pine forest east of Ipswich. Nearby the forest lies two NATO bases named RAF Woodbridge and RAF Bentwaters. At the time were being leased to the United States Air Force. On the night of December 26, 1980, around 3 a.m., reports of strange light in the sky were received at both Air Force bases, local police stations, and nearby control towers. So a lot of people saw what was happening.
So is this a British Air Force base and a separate American Air Force base?
No, they're both British Air Force. They're both NATO bases. Oh, okay, so they're... Yeah.
What do you mean by control towers? Like, people are up there...
Radar.
Radar.
And, like, what do they call it?
The air traffic control.
Yeah, like receptors
Thank
and
you.
Stuff like that.
What's that?
Like, receptors, too, and stuff like that?
I don't know what you mean.
Yeah. Like, cell phone towers?
No, just...
No, this was in 1980. There were no cell phone towers.
Jesus. It's just these dudes in a radar tower just watching the planes come in and go so they don't crash into each other.
Yeah,
right.
Air traffic control.
Okay.
So... From the East Gate at Woodbridge, a few patrolmen. So let me start off by saying this is a huge, huge incident that took place over a couple of days. My goal is to talk about this over the next few episodes because there's just so much involved and it's so intricate that I want to make sure that I do it justice. So stay tuned because there's going to be more to come.
So this is a part one.
This is part one.
Hell yeah.
Part one.
We're going to do part two
next episode.
Yep.
Good.
So what I'm going to tell you about is the story from just one witness's perspective and what he experienced and so forth. So.
That's insane.
From the East Gate at Woodbridge, a few patrolmen went to investigate. It was about a mile from the base. They're just thinking it was a downed aircraft. Jim Peniston, a security officer, and John Burroughs approached what appeared to be a triangular metallic shape, measuring 3 meters across and 2 meters in height. The object appeared to be glowing a bright white light that lit up the forest and also appeared to have a reddish light on the top of the craft with blue lights under it. The craft also appeared to be hovering. It is said that the animals in the surrounding area of the forest were described as being in a frenzy.
What?
So nature was responding to whatever was happening. They approached the craft, and the bright white light dimmed or dissipate, giving a more detailed look. Peniston describes the size as a 9 by 9 by 9 foot triangle that was about 7 feet tall. As they got closer to the craft, they experienced what felt like a static electricity on their skin, a feeling of slow moving, like walking through water or sand, and the surrounding nature faded, and it felt as though time had slowed down. Peniston then took out his notebook and began drawing sketches of the craft, how the lights were situated, and so on. And I'll make sure to send some photos to Forrest so he can post them on the website.
Oh, they're photos of this actual craft?
Yep, well, of his actual drawing.
Oh, okay.
Of his, please. His first-hand experience that he drew right then and there. He said that while he was writing notes and drawing this, the picture of the craft, his handwriting had changed. Like, something was trying not to...
To let him not...
To let him not finish.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's quite strange.
There's a paranormal type of thing going on.
Yeah. So, as they were looking at the craft, Peniston noticed that, you know, while the it was smooth, metallic in surface, there were glyphs along the side. So when he reached out to touch those glyphs, it felt more like sandpaper, just in the etching where those were.
Interesting.
So he touches these glyphs. Peniston touched the craft over the glyphs and described them as being etched into the side like a sandpaper. Sorry. Stepped away from the craft, and both men said that they became engulfed in the bright white light, hovered up to the tree line, and it took off instantly. So quickly, it was like it disappeared. So it went up, it hovered, and then it just shot. Gone.
Rocketed
in
off.
An instant. So these men returned to the base and were told by their commanding officers during their debriefing that, this is a quote, Project Blue Book ended in 1969 and the matter should not be discussed any further. For those of you who don't know what Project Blue Book is, it was a organization within the United States Air Force that was in charge of researching UFO activity.
Which had been rampant between, like, the 40s.
Started in 1947 and it ended in 1969. Yeah. And any UFO activity is not to be investigated.
Didn't they release the Project Blue Book information within the last decade or so?
Freedom of Information Act.
Yeah, so...
Not all of it, but some.
But, I mean, most of it is... There's a good portion, maybe 70-80% of it has actually been redacted.
And oh,
yeah. Blocked out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yep. Yeah, what? Freedom of information, my ass.
Right. Freedom of some information.
I thought that
freedom
was
the
verse.
Freedom of the information we want you to have. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, that was a big thing when they did release that information. But, yeah, Project Blue Book did end in the 60s. And, again, they weren't necessarily investigating these types of incidences in the 70s, 80s, and even as of recently.
Right.
You know?
So these guys got scared during the debriefing because it's their careers that are on the line.
Right.
And a lot of what information was withheld during that time for that fear, which is why some people say it's inconsistencies in these guys' stories, but it's more so the fact that they're retired, they don't have to worry about losing their jobs, that all this other information is now coming about, even though it's been 30-something years.
Didn't we discuss something similar to this in a previous episode, I think, with John, where people, they usually don't want to tell these types of stories, especially back then, back in the 80s and 90s.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
Any type of craziness, people just thought you was a wacko and didn't want to, you know, hire you. And if you put yourself out there and said, I had this experience, especially during they're still in the military.
Yeah.
You know, their higher ups and their supervisors aren't going to promote them anywhere if they're telling crazy stories and causing problems for them.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there was a couple of I looked into this briefly, and there was a couple of bobbies that actually came out, like British police officer. This happened over several nights. There was a lot of you know, different activity, and some of these bobbies actually came out to witness one of the events. I believe it was the third night. And what ended up happening to them is they were kind of drummed out of the force. One of them became an alcoholic, and the other one basically died in obscurity. So the fears that Rachel's talking about are absolutely not unfounded.
No, I mean, especially with this story, yeah.
Well, that, and it's something, Project Blue Book, they were told not to talk about it. It ended in 1969, and that was that.
Wow.
Yeah, and these people who saw what they saw, touched what they touched, experienced what they experienced, are trying to tell these people this is what happened, and they're like, no, that it never happened. You guys were, it was just some crazy lights or something that we saw.
Yeah, so these guys get back to the base after the first night incident, and they're, one of their commanders, Lieutenant Colonel Holt.
Lieutenant?
Yes. which is famously known for as the Halt Memo, which we'll discuss in further detail over the next couple episodes, because there's just so much to talk about.
Oh, I bet.
There really is.
There's a lot.
Had shown up to the base at about 5 a.m., which is only 2 hours after this incident had happened, and everything was already marked top secret.
Okay.
So their boss can't access the information because he's not cleared for it.
So how can he even...
Exactly.
Let them know what's going on with it, or...
Right.
Right, right.
Right.
That's kind of interesting that Project Blue Book ended, but it's been marked top secret.
It's top secret and classified information.
Which makes you can go down a whole conspiracy theory.
And then it gets crazy.
Okay.
So when Peniston touched the side of the craft, he began experiencing what he describes in his mind's eye. Just numbers. Zeros and ones. Zeros and ones, zeros and ones. And all binary code, repeating and repeating. It didn't stop until he wrote them down in the same notebook in which he drew the sketches. So, writes those numbers down. He stops seeing that in his brain. He puts the notebook away for 30-something years. And in 2010, he showed this information to a man named Joe Luciano. Italian guy.
Joe Luciano!
Obviously. Decoded the binary code. And this is what it says. Exploration of Humanity, 8100. It gives north and west coordinates, which shows somewhere in Brazil. And then it says continuous for planetary advance. Fourth coordinate, continue. And it's jumbled, but then it says the word before. It posts more coordinates that show another place in Belize, Sedona, Arizona, the Great Pyramid in Giza, Egypt, the Nazca Lines in Peru, a temple in China, and a temple in Greece. So these are places.
These are all hotspots of UFO activity.
And they are.
As well, aren't
it's
they?
The, the Nazca Lines. I mean,
all of those, if you were probably to look at the UFO sightings for each one of those areas, you would see that these are hotspots.
This is
UFO
what was
activity.
In this guy's mind.
Scary. Well, this is what it was Very in the scary. Code in his mind that he wrote down. That's crazy.
Now, did he speak binary?
That's no. Well, this happened in 1980. So, I mean, computers were barely existent. They didn't even, I don't even think they had them in the Air Force at the time.
They made a rudimentary version.
They would have punch card machines,
So at the end of this message, it also says, eyes of your eyes, origin, gives coordinates again for Brazil, origin year 8100. So this took place in, the code was deciphered in 2010. When he started with these numbers was in 1980, right after the incident.
Interesting. I wonder what the 8100 is.
30 years? Took 30 years. Wow.
Because he had put it away forever.
Well, yeah.
He kind of just...
He wrote it down. To get it out of his head. It escaped his mind, and then...
So he had this thing just wouldn't stop moving around in his brain and just kept on going and 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 going. And he figured that the only way to get rid of it was by writing it down. And when he wrote all the entire sequence down, it finally stopped in his brain.
Right.
Which is weird in itself.
I'm sorry.
I have a theory. I'm gonna write it down in this piece of paper. Sorry about all the noise, guys. 8100.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
Right? You see that? See that? 8100?
8100.
Yeah.
1980. 8 and 1 is 9. Couple of zeros. Boom. There it is.
Oh.
There it is.
Interesting. That could have been their way of...
And I don't know in binary what the difference would be, but is there something there? I don't know. I just made this up in my head right now.
Yeah.
Could be.
Could very well be a connection. And again, the 8100 is definitely pertinent. And I mean, what is that number significant? But again, this is very interesting with the coordinates.
That's the creepy part.
Origin, all these other words that are in there that actually get you into this. They're out there, we're being watched, they're keeping an eye on us, this is important. we wanted you guys to have this information. We are giving you this information.
Eyes of my eyes. I mean, that's
yep.
right. It was basically
eyes of your eyes.
Eyes of your eyes. Thank you.
This would be like an emotional drone that they had sent down or something, or connectivity. Like, because if it gave this person this information and it's like eyes of my eyes, I want you to see what I'm seeing, mm-hmm. what we're seeing, what we're doing.
Right.
Crazy.
That's interesting. That's
so
great.
I didn't really have too much time this week to get super into it, but one of these locations supposedly is a sunken island Ooh. Off the coast of Brazil, which what was briefly read said to be the second Atlantis.
How many Atlantises were there?
I don't know. Well, maybe, we know of the first Atlantis.
Maybe there were multiple
Atlantises.
Or
Atlantises.
Atlanti.
Multiple these islands off of the coast of all these places that were, you know, ancient civilizations
right.
or, you know, in could have been destroyed during the same thing.
Right.
You know, wow. some sort of ancient nuclear explosion, John?
Possibly.
Or some yeah. sort of botanagete story that, you know, you look back and, like, these ancient civilizations were destroyed by aliens and some of these crazy stories, in which we might be hitting upon at some point
well, that's
sooner, John?
Is it quite the possibility?
Quite the possibility.
Quite the possibility.
Quite the possibility.
That's like one of these coordinates. It's the Great Pyramid in Egypt. I mean, they're hieroglyphs. Everybody has seen ancient aliens.
You said Belize, though, too, right?
Yep, there's a few.
Belize is a massive hotspot mm-hmm. area.
For the Nazca lines yeah, in Peru?
Of course.
Those are only visible from space, and they were made before the invention of flight. So
you have the theories that these people invented balloons, hot air balloons, or had their own things.
Well, yeah. But not
or kites or that. Something. But no, I mean, you've really had to get a good view of these. You have to be up there pretty good.
One of the Nazca lines is in the shape of a plane. So I mean, it was built in, you know, the pre-Columbian times,
right.
and it's the shape of an airplane.
So yeah,
it's unbelievable. And some of those creatures weren't necessarily natural to the environment in that area too. I mean, there's pictures of monkeys up there, I think mm-hmm. too, right? And other different types of creatures and animals that probably weren't necessarily native at that time, or native at the time in which they were made, which was ancient times.
Right.
Which is interesting. Are there any other things that were...
This is just the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, wow.
But like I said, in order to do it justice, I'm going to have to give you the full story. This is just, like I said, a little taste.
So this was just his perspective.
This is just what happened with this one man.
During the day one, he experienced these on day one, right?
Day one.
The initial day.
Yep, the initial.
And that was when they first saw the lights, and then he went off into the Rendlesham Forest.
Rendlesham Forest, yep. December 26th, 1980. So it was literally Christmas Eve, and the joke is, oh yeah, they caught Santa, but...
That's kind of funny, So and then basically they came upon this area in the forest, and that's where he saw that round.
Yeah, there was a
nine. No, it was a triangular 9x9x9.
They walked into a glowing bright light,
which has gotta have some significance. Put those nines upside down, everybody.
Six.
So it's Satan. He'll
solved it.
So and on the other thing too is Peniston, you know, on his own time went back out into the forest and took plaster casts of where the landing gear
was. This the next day?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. So later that morning.
Think, right?
Yeah, they were told not to investigate it. But I mean, if you saw something that amazing and were told not to discuss it, what would you do?
I would. Yeah.
The first thing I did would investigate what I just saw.
Right. Yeah. I would go collect evidence.
Right.
Which there's so much,
and
so much to talk about.
Give that to us next time.
I will give it to you next time. So.
So
right. Tune in.
So right. It's neat about Peniston.
Yeah. Is he
Peniston?
I did call him Peniston.
How is it spelled?
P-E-N-N-I-S-T-O-N. I mean,
Peniston.
What?
It's
like William Peniston.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's
neat? The son of William Penn. Who knows?
What's neat about the guy is he is his notebook is online. Like you can go and you can see the 16 pages of ones and zeros that he sketched out, and they look frantic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, worse than my handwriting. They are just nuts. And
you get chicken scratched.
Yeah, oh hell yeah. And then he's also got the drawing of the hieroglyphs.
Yep.
And you can actually see who, like, the decoding that was done by, I forget his name, the Italian
Joe
guy.
Luciano.
Luciano.
That's a good.
I'm assuming that's how you say it because it's an Italian name.
That's a good binary code.
Yeah, it's a spicy binary. Yeah, so that guy. But, I mean, you can actually see, like, the work that was done, the people that were involved. So it's really kind of like open book, which is fun.
I don't know much about binary code, but could that have been decipherable during that time in 1980?
Because binary's been around for a while. We've been using ones and zeros to code stuff for quite a bit of time. It's like 60s, I think, we started, right?
50s. I don't exactly know when we began using binary with computers, but I think they grew up together.
Right. Yeah.
So that's almost a universal language.
Right. And it would be considered a universal language, especially if these aliens were aware that we knew binary.
Well, it's easy to translate.
Well, it's a mathematical code.
Right.
Absolutely, and mathematics is a universal language, and they often talk about in these movies or in different experiences that if we were to experience firsthand UFO aliens or creatures from a different universe or in UFOs, that the language that we would communicate with each other first would be a mathematical language. We would have to figure out what we were trying to do with numbers, but it would be with numbers, and I think that's the universal truth. That a lot of people would agree upon.
What was on the disc that Carl Sagan?
It was a DNA code of humans, along with of some of our great music.
Yeah, so Beethoven was on there. The sound of children playing, the sound of just nature. I think it was the sound of his then girlfriend, but then his Carl Sagan's wife's heartbeat. So it was supposed to be the sound of a heart that was in love.
Mm.
And then, you know, directions to get here so you can blow us up.
But I think they did it. I think they encoded the human DNA on there, too.
No, we
hadn't even gone there.
We hadn't gone there at that time.
Okay.
But yeah, we sent Voyager 1 in one direction, Voyager 2 in the other direction, and presumably they're still pinging directions how to get here and screw us up. Nothing scares me more than the Voyager probes. Nothing.
Seriously?
On the surface. Swear to God.
Well, you're sending out a beacon going, here we are.
Yeah, and you're basically giving them the sound of a heartbeat, which they probably don't understand, and the sound of children playing, which if you would think about it, they either are people who care about their children or they're not, and most of them probably aren't. Like you know,
not even that.
Because
like,
they're probably more of a logical society.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a cultural thing. So to them, that could sound like screaming.
Or these murderous people. Right. Or like, what are these? Are they all this stupid? Let's destroy them.
A really good movie that kind of delves into lost language is Arrival.
Yes, of course. Arrival. That's a great movie. We'll have to review that at some point in the future if we don't do the movie we were just talking about.
That really? That's a good one.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a killer flick, yeah. The cool language, and they have the linguist going in there.
Yeah.
What was neat is I looked into this thing a little bit this morning, and one of the guys that was a witness, one of the knights, actually said that when he was being debriefed, the guy's name's Larry Warren,
mm-hmm.
when he was being debriefed, he said that the guy that was debriefing him slipped and said that, you know, multiple civilizations have already visited. And that's all that this guy talks about. And now, take Larry Warren with a grain of salt. He has been running around the UFO circuit since the 1980s, running around with his mullet in the 90s, talking about this his experience as an airman on this base.
Yeah, but these guys are in a position where they see and experience these things, can't by law talk about what they saw outside of, you know, the military in civilian life, and then what do you expect? Some of these people snap, and then they have to let people, they just can't control it, and they break all these laws and rules and everything. And then what the government does for the next few years is go, they're fucking quacks. These guys don't know what they're talking about. This never happened.
Or they show up dead.
Or they end up dead, yeah. But some of these people like him, like you were saying, he's been through the circuit through the years, and he's been a strong proponent, but nobody's listening to him except for the people who, like us, are listening to him.
Well, it's a fascinating.
And he's probably never held a normal job because he's a quack and, you know, he's a fucking weirdo.
I love UFO shit. I watch Ancient Aliens, not Ancient Aliens, Unsealed Alien Files to fall asleep at night.
Creepy stuff.
That's warped.
I would watch it
this
too.
This is the stuff that puts me to sleep. But it's also
because it comforts
it's
you.
It's comforting, and it's also very informative. And once you think about it, and I've seen all the episodes so many times.
Oh, my bad.
But this is one of my favorites.
Well, I need to check it out. I really do.
It's interesting because, again, I mean, we've all had our own UFOs. I've experienced UFOs with you. I've experienced the UFO phenomena with everybody in this room.
Yep.
We all have.
Absolutely. And I mean, we all have a shared a knowledge. We've all experienced this stuff. And to have people tell us that we're fucking crazy otherwise is just, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a weather balloon. For these people.
Fucking weather balloon.
Well, Rachel, thank you so much for giving us part one of the Rendlesham Forest.
I can't wait to tell you guys the rest.
We're
going to be
to
awesome.
Come back next week with the second part of this, and I think it will probably be the final installment of this episode.
I'm hoping. Herman said he'd help me out with some research.
Nice. Heck yeah.
Co-tag team research development here on this story, guys. But again, thank you very much, Rachel, for the Rendlesham Forest part one. Next week, we will do Rendlesham Forest part two, so please stay tuned for that.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Well, that was part one of the Rendlesham Forest. At this time right now, we're going to move into our segment we like to call Getting Lost in the Forest. A segment where we let our young and passionate forest basically give us a, you know, example of what chafes his balls, what's making him angry during the week. All right, Forest, let's get us lost in the forest.
Okay, here we go. Hey guys, how's it going? Today's my rant about Trump's Justice Department blocks monitoring of crimes against LGBT teens, well, teenagers. In a notice on Wednesday, the Department of Justice, headed by anti-LGBT Attorney General Jeff Sessions, announced a revision to the National Crime Victimization Survey, one of the key sources of data on victims of crime. This angers me beyond belief, because, you know, I grew up with years of constant bullying in almost every way possible in middle school, where I grew up in South New Jersey, high school in Central Massachusetts. Even though I was extremely proactive with trying to get help throughout middle school and high school, the public school systems all told me the same thing. Even in my high school in Massachusetts that I transferred to sophomore year in high school, he claims it's, for example, I'm quoting, if he claims it's against their beliefs and the state / federal government / the branches of government, etc., still excludes mandatory motions to allow sexuality to our bullying policies, then he has every right to do so if it's his religious belief and there is nothing we can do. In middle school, I was threatened in the most disgusting ways possible, and my main bully brought a knife to school with a death list.
Jesus. Wow.
Yeah, when I was in high school in Mass, I was very quiet about my sexuality. It wasn't anyone's business, but every day, bros kept asking me if I was a fag or a fudge packer. But my principal, Mr. Pig, told me it was my fault for being so open about it. At the age I was in, I didn't know what to do. I just felt like nothing and thought of suicide many times. Nowadays, people are blaming the students for these people who snap or kill themselves. But in reality, you can't blame the students without realizing the other factors, such as the school boards for enabling. You can't blame the parents without also realizing that our country's government leaders are a factor as well for underfunding school safety and mental health drastically since 2010 and 2011. I am not talking about private schools either. These are public schools as well, but we can save that for a whole nother podcast. This part of my life is one of the reasons I am how I am today, especially on a mental level.
Yep.
Also, we can't forget the science part of this, how vulnerable and undeveloped you are when you are in your teen years, especially since there's tons of research out there, scientific research out there, that proves you're really not fully grown until, what, like 25?
20, yeah, well, 23. It's 21 is when your cognitive development is fully formed.
But your brain continues to sort of develop synaptically?
Kind of.
25
yeah, but who's got their shit figured out in their 20s?
Right.
Truth.
Exactly.
Truth. Do you have anything else to say for it, or were you all set with this?
I don't have it figured out.
To be honest with you, no. I'm just, you know, it's just extremely angering. I'm sure a lot of people, such as myself, are experiencing the same kinds of feelings. Even people who are straight, they're just allies who have gotten bullied because maybe people thought they were bi or gay or whatever.
Well, I was what you would call an ally. I had friends. Yep. I was one to stick up for these people. You know, the fag word came out a lot. you know, I'm specifically thinking of a few of my friends that I did have who were openly gay and were proud of it. And
I wasn't. And I was everybody, more forced
everybody
out.
Had a, this person was a standalone person, though. He was, right. You know, he was proud and didn't fucking matter.
Kudos to him.
But he got a lot of. Him. He got a lot of flack, and you know, I stood by them. I also stood by, like, the mentally challenged kids, because they nice. Got made fun of, like,
oh, yeah, too, I feel but, so bad. I dated one in middle school.
To pull back on any type of protection for this type of bullying, I mean, granted, bullying shouldn't be accepted any which way, shape, or form, but to specifically not count sexual bullying in this data is... It's wrong. It really is, in my opinion.
It still goes on before...
We're gonna treat everybody equally. In this country.
And keep your God out of my schools,
right,
huh?
Absolutely.
Seriously.
Religious views should have nothing to do with how we keep data on bullying.
Right.
Bullying is bullying regardless. And it's if this awful. Person is being
no
bullied
one deserves to get bullied.
Because this other asshole has a problem with him because his God, who never once in the fucking Bible said that gays, lesbians, trans are wrong. It's fucking bullshit, dude.
Yep, I've even heard people in Boston just on the train. I was there for like a Red Sox game or whatever, even packed.
Yeah, you go to Boston, dude, the word fag is unfortunately going to be used all
the time. Oh, I'm not talking about that. I mean, random people walk up to us like on the train systems or bus systems, and they're like, oh, are you a supporter of gay people? Then you're going to go to hell.
Oh, thank you.
And it's like, well...
You get those.
You also like to wear your rainbow t-shirt. So, I mean, that doesn't help your case.
I wear it all the time.
Why should he be targeted at all because he wore... I'm going to start wearing rainbow shirts all over the place.
People might think you're bi or gay, but that's like, just awful.
Maybe it's awful. Maybe I'm not. Not your fucking business.
I hope you're not.
Move on, fella. Move on, fella. The symbol...
It's just stereotypes are awful.
The symbol of the flag is a symbol of unity. It has always been a symbol of unity. It will always be a symbol of unity. That is why the movement uses that symbol.
Mm-hmm.
It is a beautiful symbol. The rainbow is one of the most beautiful things on this planet, in my opinion.
Interesting.
It's a beautiful symbol of unity. It unifies every color, visibly and non-visibly.
You guys are wearing rainbow? Kudos. Thank you. I love your very colorful too, Rachel.
I'm wearing it. Everything's going to be all right, Bob Marley shirts.
Everything just might be all right.
Yeah, guys. Forrest, honestly, this was one of your best.
Really? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for it.
It really opened our eyes, and I hope it really opens the eyes of others who listen to this. This is a problem. This is a part of the darker side. That
happens a lot down south, too.
We live in our existence here on planet Earth and in our country right now, America.
Kids should be allowed to grow up and be who the... They are.
It sounds really bad, but this is why a lot of people stay in the closet. Yeah. It's
because of this, absolutely.
And it shouldn't be that way.
I'm not going to lie, too. I've seen videos. Oh, yeah. Drink a little bit.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Not going to lie.
I mean, yes, it's a new thing that I've been learning over the years, but I've seen those videos. We have like the 8-year-olds, the 6-year-olds, girls doing boy stuff, boys putting on makeup. And people say, oh, these millennials or whatever. And I'm like, just let them be themselves, you know? But at the same time, though, maybe they shouldn't post it online.
No. They should. That kid who posts those videos of him doing makeup and everything.
And he does such a great job.
Yeah, phenomenal, right?
Phenomenal. Whatever pronoun he wants to associate with. Unbelievable makeup.
It's amazing.
You know.
Are you talking about Jeffree Star?
Well, he was in my teen years a lot.
No, not Jeffree Star, but this is new kid. He's probably like 8 or 9 years old who basically...
Wow, no kidding.
Yeah, Sephora stuff on him or stuff like that.
Dude, he is unbelievable.
I can't even watch the... This kid is going
to have a... This kid is going to have a career in makeup and...
He's
going to
be very successful.
Or be a successful model himself because he is a... He's a charming young
fellow. For all we know, he's straight. Like he
could be straight. Who knows?
And that's fine. He just likes doing makeup.
Then you get people throwing shade all over the place. You get your bullies, your trolls.
Oh, the parents.
Exactly.
Yeah,
the parents should spank him. It's like, well, let the kid be who that kid wants to be. We shouldn't tell our kids. We should give them good parenting. We should give them discipline. We should give them a direction. Let them know this.
And encouragement.
And encourage them to be who they want to be. I'm not giving you the millennial helicopter thing. If my parents had said, be who you want to be, do what you want to do, just we're here 100%. My life may have gone in a different direction. I did have really decent support. I can't say that they didn't, but that type of direction is what every kid needs nowadays. And
they
need to find out who they are. Who they're going to be by themselves.
If a boy wants to play with Barbies or watch, I don't know, some kind of girly Disney movie.
Oh, so our 5-year-old
who cares,
loves My Little Pony.
That's amazing.
Loves it.
Embrace it.
But he came home one day, and we're like, hey, bud, what do you want for Christmas? You really liked My Little Pony. Did you want some toys? No.
Doesn't mean he's going to be gay.
He said, those are for girls. And it's like, yeah, but aww, they're toys. But toys are for everyone.
I was like, who told you that?
There's no gender in toys.
Who told you that? I'm like, yeah, buddy, I told him straight out. I said, if you want to play with My Little Pony, play with My Little Pony. You want to play with Transformers? That's awesome.
Girls want to play with guns? Whatever. I mean, that's on them.
There are tons of girls that want
to
play with guns.
They're toys. They're meant to be played with. It doesn't matter who's playing them.
Yeah.
They're marketed for certain sexes.
Of course they are.
It's awful. Wrong.
Hey, My Little Pony, you can call me Brony if you want. I think it's one of the most creative.
I applaud you.
Well-written. Probably some of the most life lessons that you can get out of a show. It's beautiful. Agreed. To look at. Come on, whatever. My Little Pony, killer. A+ on that. I'll get 100 out of 100 whatevers.
Yep.
That's my 100 out of 100
Rambos,
okay?
I love My Little Pony. So cute.
But it's a great movie. We brought our son to the movie. It was
his first experience in a movie theater.
Oh, yeah, that new one that just came out?
Yep.
Yeah, it's great. You know, be who you want to be, kids. Please. Love who you want to love. And do what you want to do within the constraints of being a good person.
Yeah, of course. Be who you are. Be an amazing person.
Thank
be
you so much again, Forrest. I really... this is, again, one of the better Getting Lost in the Forest.
I feel
it's really, really opened up, I think, a lot of our hearts and eyes. And thank you for sharing your experiences and this thing here.
Thanks, guys.
I feel like we all got lost in the forest and then found a picnic table under a tree.
And had a conversation.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's what this segment's all about, man. We saw the darker side and then we conquered.
Yep.
And listen, everybody, if shit's going wrong and everything looks like the world just couldn't get any bleaker, there's so many places. Reach out. There are people that love you.
Contact us. I'll talk to you.
Let us know. Yeah.
Rachel's got a psychology background. Forrest has been bullied. I was bullied. I was a fat kid. John?
I have some
I'm still a fat kid. just reach out to the fat kids. Like, you're beautiful the way you are.
We love you all, honestly. And
be you.
Again, there are 100 ways that you can get help. And
suicide hotline.
Maybe in our notes for the podcast, because none of us did any research for this, but Forrest,
I can provide
give
it.
Them some helplines. Helplines.
Yeah, and great idea.
And places to go in case they are being bullied and they need help.
They're in a bad situation.
Exactly. Well, guys, thank you so much for joining us in the Darker Side podcast today.
Thank you.
I am David Pottle. You can find me on Facebook at David Pottle. That is Bottle with a P, P-O-T-T-L-E. You can find my band at Frenemy Providence on Facebook. You can find us on all the other social medias. My other podcast that I do is Life Relationships and Everything in Between with Kevin Spurl, a great podcast that's a completely different format. Guys, please rate, like, and subscribe. Please give us some reviews on Google Play and iTunes. Without those reviews, we can't get any bigger. We can't move any further.
Please.
Whether you like it or not, just give us an honest review.
Even if something upset you during our podcast, just tell us. You know?
Yeah, we want to hear
and
about
give
it.
Give us your feedback, honestly. Thank you so much, guys, for coming. Rachel, what do you got for dates?
So I'm Rachel Pottle. My lovely husband, David, here is the host. You can find me on Facebook, Rachel Gordon Pottle, Bottle with a P, as was described. I am the original way of spelling, which is R-A-C-H-E-L. You can also find me on Snapchat. Add me. Send some pics. DRP49532. I'd love to hear from you all. Thank you again for having me, guys, and I can't wait to come back.
You are always a permanent part of this podcast.
Now, yes, please.
All four of us are the permanent part of this podcast.
We're like an amazing team, and I love it.
Forrest, what do you got for some deeds and bullshits?
Okay, I just want to thank all of you for listening to me, and thank all of our podcaster listeners, all that great stuff. Just thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to have your ear. I just, you know, I'm Forrest Smith. I have a company named Forrest Films, although now it's more of an advertisement company than anything else. I'm on YouTube, you know, Facebook, just Forrest Films with two R's. Forrest Films. You know, I'm on anything else really, Instagram as Forrest Smith on Instagram. And please check out our group pages, Facebook, WordPress, you know, we're on freaking YouTube. You can even have a YouTube on your phone, Podbean, Twitter, Instagram,
WordPress.
Yeah, Pinterest?
WordPress,
yeah.
We
WordPress.
Haven't done Pinterest yet.
Not yet. And whatever, you know, whatever. And soon we might even be on Spotify. We're now finally available on Android platform for Android Play Music,
boom,
which is amazing. Play, so Play, please Play. Check us out. Right. If you can't find us, message us. We'll give you the link directly to our Android Play Music cast. You know, on Twitter, we kind of have a different name. It's I think it's Darker Side Pod. Instagram, it's the same thing. It's a different one. It's just regular, you know, the Darker Side Podcast. You can find us with that information on almost all the platforms, the Darker Side Podcast. And but thank you for listening, and I'm Forrest Smith, and thank you.
John.
Yeah, what up? I'm John Herman. You can find me at Herman Brau. That's HERRMANN, the German word for beer, BRAU. At Instagram, you can find me on Facebook if you want. I hate that platform, but I use it to set up events with my friends. And
promote his podcast.
What was that?
And promote his podcast.
And promote, and shamelessly promote my podcast. I love you all. Take care. Be well.
All right, everybody. Peace and love.
Peace.
Have a wonderful time.
Make good choices.
Please do.
Drive fast and take chances.
That's yes.
Never
yes.
drive faster than I can see.
Yes. Thank you, guys.
There are no
Thank
roads you. Where we're going.
Oh, yeah.
The darker so high, the lighter.